Hello, radio family! Welcome to Divine Intervention, the interview show that features intriguing people who've experienced the hand of God in amazing ways. I'm your host, Daniel Fazina. And friends, you know, I just love the scope of what God can do. We can do shows about all different types of things. And today we're going to be talking with a filmmaker. Yes, that's right. We'll be hearing what God is doing in the film and entertainment industry. I have the privilege of speaking with Dan Merchant, who is the director of the documentary film, Lord, Save Us from Your Followers. Dan makes his debut as a documentary director and jumpsuit-wearing bumper sticker man in Lord, Save Us from Your Followers, the product of an amazing three-year journey to the front lines of America's so-called culture wars. Dan has made a living by writing, producing, directing, and talking people into his ideas. Dan's creative brain rarely slows down, and he's currently applying his unique vision to a heartwarming web of life ensemble drama about grace, fittingly titled Grace Finds Beauty. Dan is also developing The Armor, an exciting supernatural action-adventure tale inspired by the biblical battle between the seen and unseen worlds. He recently optioned the screenplay You Make Me Sick, co-written with James Melkonian, a raucous teen comedy about a high schooler who fakes a terminal illness to improve his social standing. Dan has had the privilege of speaking about Lord Save Us at colleges, churches, conferences, and summer camps from coast to coast. Dan enjoys the gift of engaging directly with an audience and hopes to do more. His most recent book, the wildly successful Lord Save Us from Your Followers, is the companion book to the documentary and was released by Thomas Nelson in March 2008. A follow-up book, Loving Kindness Actually Works, is underway. Dan has been happily married for 21 years and is the father of two teenage boys. And Dan joins us now on Divine Intervention to share about his life, his testimony, and his career in the film industry. Dan, welcome to Divine Intervention. You're on.
Great to be with you, Daniel. Thanks for having me.
Not a problem. Now, Dan, I was simply enthralled with your new film, Lord, Save Us from Your Followers. I thought it was funny, insightful, thought-provoking, and heartwarming at the same time. So congratulations on a good job.
Oh, great. I appreciate it. That's what we aimed for.
Okay, great.
As an artist, it's good to be able to connect and communicate with an audience. So I'm really happy to hear that. Thank you.
You're welcome. Well, certainly connected with me and I'm sure many other people. But before we get into Lord Save Us from Your Followers, a wonderful new documentary film, I want to ask you about your background. Can you tell us a little bit about yourself and you know, where and how you grew up and what it was like for you growing up?
Sure. I grew up in the Pacific Northwest, in the Seattle area.
Okay.
Kind of all around Puget Sound. My folks divorced when I was 9, and so I have two little brothers and sisters. Two brothers. Andy and Sam, who are 1 2 years younger, 1 7 years younger. So, you know, we lived with my mom growing up, and we visited about a zillion different kinds of churches. We moved around a fair bit, kind of through the years there. So I was exposed to kind of a wide range of different churches in the Christian side, and then on my dad's side of the street, you know, he did a bit more exploring in terms of religion and the metaphysics and all that kind of stuff. So I've really had an interesting exposure to sort of a you know, marketplace of ideas. Mm-hmm. And out in the West, obviously the institutional church is a bit different than it is in the South or you know, the Northeast or something.
Right.
It doesn't have the same same stature, the same hold. You know, you're not obligated to be in church you know, every weekend the way you are in some parts of the country. So
right.
it's a little more open, and in a way, because of that, I think the people that go to church really want to be there.
Yeah, well, that's a good thing.
As opposed to feel like you have to be there.
Right, right.
And so that was kind of interesting. But, you know, in the Lord Save Us film, I poke fun at some movies that were made probably, I guess, in the early 70s or something, Thief in the Night and things like
right,
that.
Right, I saw those.
Because I remember them being shown in, you know, during junior high and even high school, you know, youth groups. And I always used to joke that it was amazing to watch the stoners find Jesus after these horror films that were, you know, just terribly done. But
hey, God can use them, right?
Well, I don't know if it was God, honestly. they were sure getting used, though, you know, because when you get scared into your faith, you know, it lasts about a week.
Oh, wow.
And so consequently, you know, I got saved about 9 times in junior high, because every time they'd show one, I was like, oh, man, I better do it again just to be sure. So it was very interesting. So that was the period in the, you know, late 70s, early 80s that, you know, that I was, as a you know, high school kid or a junior high kid, kind of exploring my faith. And then I guess late high school, you know, I decided to get baptized in a river, just to be sure. You know, because I got sprinkled on the forehead, that might have not been enough. The churches split over these issues. I better be sure.
Yeah.
So, anyway, so that's I'm being a little tongue in cheek there, but basically, you know, I was thoughtful, and you know, the stuff that Jesus talked about always made more sense to me than anything else. It always felt right.
Okay.
On some level, and certainly the you know, the call to self-sacrifice and to humility and to grace, you know, those things just seemed so different than what I saw in the world.
Mm-hmm.
That I was always amazed that when those things Christ demonstrated and talks about, when I would see those things played out in some part of life, I would always just be amazed, like, wow, where'd that come from? Boy, when that person was forgiven, when that other person didn't have to forgive them, some really amazing stuff happened. Wow, oh, that's the stuff Jesus talks about. So that, you know, just even as a kid, even as a high schooler or a young person, that was the stuff that really caught my eye, and why I chose that over, you know, all kinds of other options that are out there. So, you know, it was interesting because I really did have the freedom to try and decide what I believed and why I believed it, as opposed to growing up a staunch Catholic or Baptist or Lutheran or right, whatever. So,
well, that's good. I mean, people, you know, they often grow up in those traditions and they get an inherited faith, but it doesn't necessarily, they don't necessarily make it their own all the time. And I think everyone has to come to that point where they choose Jesus for themselves, and it becomes their own personal walk with the Lord. So I'm glad to hear.
That's exactly it. That's exactly it. You have to find it for yourself, and that's when, you know, that's a hard thing. I mean, I'm a Christian parent of two teenage boys now, and I have to trust God enough to give my boys the room for them to explore faith. And there's an old filmmaker named Billy Wilder who had this great phrase where, you know, he said, you have to be really careful with an audience. You can't tell the audience, you know, what to think. What you have to do is, you know, through the different scenes and the characters and the moments, you know, set out the equation, but let them do the math.
Right.
Because when they come to the conclusion themselves, it's a revelation, a personal revelation, and the movie, you know, the moments in the movie have so much greater impact when the audience experiences it, as opposed to is told, oh, this is the exciting part. You have to be gripped, you know,
right.
And so you have to give the audience room to discover for themselves. And boy, I just think that's true about so many things in life, but certainly about somebody's, you know, exploration of faith.
Sure.
Now, you have to meet God. You can't just be told about God. You have to meet him. And when
right,
you do, then you get it.
Yeah, totally. And, you know, I appreciate that in your film, Lord Save Us from Your Followers, because you don't really tell people what to think, but you ask hard questions. You engage people of all different backgrounds. You ask them what they think, and you kind of present this dialogue, which I really appreciate. So speaking of your wonderful film, tell us, first of all, tell us about the film, set it up for us, and tell us how you came, you know, how you came up with this idea and what propelled you to make this film.
Yeah, thank you. And by the way, for listeners who want to watch a trailer or something like that, you can go to LordSaveUsTheMovie.com. The trailer is up, and actually the film will be out on DVD in April, and you can pre-order the film, get your own copy of it at our website there.
Which I highly recommend everyone do. It's an amazing film.
Well, thank you, Daniel.
You're welcome.
The journey, I suppose, began with a trip to Africa, and
okay.
I met Christians from around the world who were there doing, you know, really tremendous and difficult work. And at the time, this was in the spring of 2004, I was struck by, you know, again, the humility and grace. You know, these people were working in clinics, or they were working at food stations, or they were working in schools. You know, they were sort of doing whatever needed to be done, whatever the people in this given community in Ethiopia might need. And basically had to live in the same difficult conditions that that the people that they were loving on had to live in. And that alone, you know, I was only there 2 weeks, and, you know, that took a bit of doing. And I was just really impressed that that they were using, you know, they were being the hands and feet of the body of Christ, if you will. And not so much the mouth, as Rick Warren jokes in the
right,
film.
Right.
and so that struck me a little bit, and just because it was such a contrast to what I was basically seeing in America, that if you're not sort of a political activist focused on two issues, you're not really being a good Christian in America. And yet I saw this complete other vision of how to serve others and how to love others, and frankly how to demonstrate, you know, Jesus's love in a way that absolutely was meaningful and connected with people. And so that, I just noticed it, not only from the standpoint of, wow, isn't it good that this difficult work is being done, but it's like, oh, wow, yeah, that's right. There's a whole different way to be Christian than I was thinking of. Yeah, of course. And then the other thing that was a bit startling was to meet Ethiopian Christians. And this was my first trip to a third world country. And I have to say, I was a bit staggered because it was more like a trip back in time than it was a trip to another place. You know, it was another time in another place. It was primitive in so many ways. Even in the capital city, you know, of Addis Ababa, most of the people were in, you know, shanties. You know, they're in forts that, you know, aren't as good as the one my kids have in our backyard, you know. And it just struck me weird that that this was the world that was theirs. And what was even weirder was to meet, you know, the Ethiopian Christians who had so much faith and trust in God that they seemed to be, you know, happier and more content than I was. And they had nothing. You know, I met this one kid who lives in a hut, and they have to bring the yak in at night so the hyena doesn't get it, and there's a mud floor. And you know, we got to talking, and he told me about how his both of his parents had died of AIDS. And and really the thing that was so amazing was that he was explaining his faith to me and who Jesus was that, you know, my parents died, but not for me, but Jesus, he died for me.
Wow.
And to hear him tell that and to have that be enough, because that's pretty much all he has. God loves him and Jesus died for him. There, that's what I have. And it was enough. And, you know, that just completely, you know, tore me up because, you know, I can't say that I'm happy because of those things. It's like, well, I have a great family and a nice house and a 2002 Jeep. Is that why I'm happy? Maybe. I don't know. I've never been without all these things. And here was somebody who was without, except for this beautiful faith in God. And that kind of contentment I just hadn't seen. And
really puts things in perspective.
Go ahead.
Really puts things in perspective, doesn't it?
Well, it absolutely did, and it helped me to see that this kid probably believed his faith with a capital B, and I probably believed mine with a lowercase B, and I probably wasn't the only, you know, Christian in America who has kind of put God in the little box where he serves me in a little way that's convenient to me, and then I kind of keep him out of the rest of my life because, well, that might be inconvenient if he asks something from me.
Yeah, so, no kidding.
So that's that, coming back to a, you know, to America from that trip in Ethiopia, and coming back into the run-up to the 2004 election when, you know, Bush ran against Kerry for re-election, that's touched on briefly in the film. That, you know, boy, the contrast between the kind of faith I'd experienced from Christians in Ethiopia and what I saw when I came home, it really was upsetting to me. And I really could see how I myself had really bought into this us versus them mentality of how easy it was for me to dismiss people who didn't agree with me, how easy it was for me, frankly, to make, you know, enemies out of people, out of the very people I'm supposed to, you know, be sharing this faith with and connecting to. And, you know, just trying to apply what I saw people, you know, what I saw Christians doing in Ethiopia, tried to figure out how would we do it here? You know, how would we do it in America? Right. And frankly, trying to figure out that, well, gee, are the guys with the microphones in America, are they right? Have they just figured out that this is how our faith works in the 21st century and I should just shut up and go back to my business? Or is the kid in the hut right? You know? And really the gap between those two poles is the journey of Lord Save Us From Your Followers. That's really how it started. And not long after that trip, you know, I started doing research for the movie, and Jeff Martin, the executive producer of the film, my business partner in our little production company, you know, we decided that, yeah, we should, this is our next project. We need to dive into this thing. So thus began a long process of research and fundraising and you know, we'd get a little money and we'd go do a couple interviews. I think Tony Campolo and Al Franken were a couple of the first two interviews we did, and then really it sort of became a detective story for me. You know, I really did set out to find some answers as opposed to, well, I need some footage to support my thesis. And it wasn't like you know, some documentary films that you might have seen in recent years where people, where it seems a little one-sided or it seems like people are pretty clearly just filling in the blanks to state their opinion. I really was searching for answers, and
well, I
was sort of
that.
Surprised by what I saw at times.
Yeah, I mean, for anyone who hasn't seen the film, Lord Save Us From Your Followers, again, you can check out the trailer, LordSaveUsTheMovie.com. We are speaking with Dan Merchant. He is the director of this wonderful documentary. And in the film, I appreciated that you talked to a whole wide variety of different people. You've got gay activists in there. You've got a quote-unquote heathen radio person in there. You've got Al Franken,
well,
who's a comedian.
Right.
And, you know, a lot of the things they said were really touching. Like, I remember the woman from the radio station after she had gone to Africa and they partnered with World Vision. She said it was very clear why those people were over there. They were over there because they were Christian. They were serving, and America was getting great PR from this. I mean, the Ethiopian people didn't have TV and radio to see all the other stuff, but they associated Christians with America, and I thought that was really cool.
Yeah, no, that's a beautiful moment in the film towards the end, and you're right, Sheila Hamilton, you know, who's the news director of this rock station in Portland, Oregon, you know, an extremely bright woman and really funny and a huge music fan, so we talked music and all that, but yeah, she had a very, a very unsettling perception of who Christians were, kind of before we started talking and before she took this trip, and it was fascinating to me how entrenched the perceptions are created by, you know, some of the more unfortunate comments that show up on the news through the years.
Right.
And I think that's something that, in a weird way, we as Christians haven't really acknowledged. We are much more comfortable saying, oh, well, the truth divides, or, oh, well, you know, pearls before swine with those non-believers. When, in fact, people are quite interested in what Jesus had to say. People are looking for answers in their own life.
Right.
And the answers that they've either seen or heard, not from Jesus necessarily, or even from church, but from us, or from Christian representatives in the media, have really put them off.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't mean, you know, the way we have to look at this is if this faith that has transformed our hearts, that we say is the truth, we believe is the truth, you know, if we really do care about people, we'll go the extra mile to listen to them, to try and understand where they're coming from. And we, you know, we make these big sweeping assumptions about where people are. It's like people maybe haven't been to church. People maybe haven't had a good experience at church, and so they left church and have never come back. And so we're not dealing with people who have a clean slate when it comes to this.
Right.
We're dealing with people who have been hurt by the church and hurt by us, who have been offended or confused, really, by you know, relatively hateful comments that now and then pop up in the media, and they think, oh well, clearly Christianity isn't the answer. Then I'll keep looking, mm-hmm. and for us to dismiss them because that's where they are on their journey is ludicrous to me. So I think that's part of what we're trying to, you know, explore with the film and help Christians to understand. It's like, hey, look, guys, if the stuff we say we believe is the truth, it's the truth. Just because someone else doesn't see it that way doesn't make it not the truth. There's no reason to be defensive about it. That's all the more reason to try and imitate Jesus with the humility and grace and loving kindness. And, you know, the truth without grace is just a sledgehammer. And frankly, the truth without grace isn't the whole truth. And so we've fallen into this habit of judging people and being superior and feeling like, oh, well, we have the truth and they don't. They're poor idiots. And boy, that's incredibly off-putting to other people and is absolutely counterproductive to what Christ calls us to do.
Right. No, I definitely understand that. And I, again, one of the reasons why I appreciate your film is because of the approach you take in asking questions and engaging people and not bashing them over the head with the truth. But I think just trying to connect and build that relationship with people. You had several very touching scenes in the confessional booth at the Gay Pride event where you talked with people and confessed your shortcomings to them and apologized to the gay community. And I thought that really built some bridges. And, you know, you saw a lot of humanity come out of that. And I just thought it was a very powerful scene. Tell us about that day when you went to film that.
Yeah, that was really something. We shot at the at Pride Northwest in Portland, and it was really interesting because there'd been a couple of different times where I had sort of been gripped by fear, if you will, about doing that idea, thinking that you know, what would Christians say about it, for one thing, and I got over that pretty quick, especially when I saw somebody sent me a letter that a local pastor had some kind of prophetic dream about how you know, the gay pride event in Portland itself was going to get wiped out in a tsunami and wow. During Gay Pride Week. And I'm like, you know, if that happens, then I guess I've been believing this stuff wrong the whole time anyway. And I sort of felt like, once I saw that, I felt like, well, I had to do this, even if I had some trepidations about how it would go. And, and the morning that we were setting up the booth, along with all the other booths, I got a little afraid again. And what I was afraid of that morning was that somehow I would end up being part of the problem, that I would get into an argument or a shouting match, or when I was here to try and help, that I would just end up furthering the problem. So I just prayed that morning that, you know, that my words be God's words, and that just he would use me, and that I was trusting him, and whatever happens would happen. And that if his hand was guiding it, then whatever he wants to happen, I'll be okay with, you know, that kind of thing. And so that gave me some peace. And what was astonishing was how emotional it ended up being. It's like, I'm the furthest thing from a homophobe, but if I'm being honest, I've absolutely been offended and judgmental and unkind at times to you know, to members of the gay community, and just the slate isn't clean. You know, I can't act like, oh well, I'm, you know, I don't put you know, burning effigies on anyone's lawn. It's like, oh, that's great, Dan, but I sure haven't been who Christ wants me to be. So you know, there's a bit of humility when you have to dig deep and really go, okay, if God was looking at you, what would he have said? Mm-hmm. And you know, this is probably some of the stuff that he would have said. Well, Dan, I've seen you do this and this and this and this, and I'm like, dang, you know, I thought I was doing good, but I'm not, you know. So I confess those things, and one of the other things that was heavy on my heart was just, you know, as a writer, as a creative person, you know, you contemplate stories and contemplate, gee, well, what happens here, what happens there, and a story could completely change the ending, the outcome. And one of the things I thought about was, boy, what if the church back in the late 70s, early 80s, had responded to the AIDS crisis and come to help? If they had said, said, oh my gosh, let's not, you know, we're not worried about why these people are sick, but these people are sick and they need help and they're scared and it's a horrible disease. What can we do to help? I just couldn't get out of my head how different our country would be, how mm-hmm. less divisive our country would be, because that kind of outpouring from the church would have represented, a bridge over one of the largest gulfs in our country, and it would have changed other things, I'm sure, and certainly it would have changed relations between the gay community and the Christian community. And the fact that we didn't do it the way Jesus would have done it was heartbreaking, and I could just sort of imagine a different country in a different world if we had been obedient, frankly, in that difficult time. Well, I had that on my heart, too. So when we discussed those things, you know, with the gay community, with the 28 people that came into the booth, it was pretty amazing what happened. And you know, I felt God move, and I felt, you know, what true grace is. And you know, the fact that I didn't have a single political argument in 8 hours in that booth, and that, you know, 16 of the 28 people broke down in tears, and so did I when we talked, just showed me what can happen when we trust God and we're, you know, obedient to reaching out in love to others.
Right. And just to clarify, this confessional booth was where Dan invited members of the gay community to come in, and they weren't confessing to him, but he offered to confess to them. And I think that really opened doors and opened hearts to engage in real dialogue. And, you know, it was a very powerful scene. And once again, I applaud you for that. Once again, we're speaking with Dan Merchant. He is the director of Lord Save Us From Your Followers. And you can check out the trailer at www.lordsaveusthemovie.com. The movie's out in theaters. We'll be out on DVD soon. I highly recommend you all check it out. Dan, we're going to take a quick break, but we want to come back and hear more of your story and how God moved throughout the process of making this film. So once again, Dan Merchant, we'll be right back after the break. Stay with us on Divine Intervention.
So now all of them are our brothers. What is their sorrow? Answer them. 1 Peter 3:15 says I should be ready for the ones who call on us to share. We should defend truth with honor. Well, you start that book.
Hey, this is Daniel Fazina. Thanks for listening to my show, Divine Intervention. If you enjoy the testimonies on my talk show, I've also written a book containing more amazing stories of God's divine interventions and miracles. More information about Divine Intervention, the book, can be found on the web at www.zulonpress.com. That's XULONpress.com. Or by calling 866-381-BOOK. That's 866-381-2665.
That cat's been through it all. Christ's real in religion. God's words gonna sing your song.
Welcome back to Divine Intervention. This is the interview show that features intriguing people who've experienced the hand of God in amazing ways. And our special guest today is Dan Merchant. He is the documentarian of the new film, Lord, Save Us From Your Followers. Welcome back, Dan.
Hey, thanks, Daniel.
No problem. So before the break, you were telling us about some powerful things that happened, I guess, in the confessional booth while you were talking to members of the gay community. And as I mentioned to you, this show is primarily about miracles, and we love to showcase when God intervenes and, you know, changes hearts, changes lives, and you know, just to show evidence that God is real and He's still moving in the world. So if you have any incidents along those lines, please share with us what happened during the filming of your documentary.
No, absolutely. Well, one of the things that was really interesting to me when I was researching and you know, going through the production of Lord Save Us From Your Followers is that, you know, God is moving all the time, and it's how it's interesting to me personally how much of it I was missing, you know.
And
we're used to defining miracles as, you know, a mother lifts a bus off of her kid, you know, or and stories. And how did you get the strength? God gave me the strength. You know, yeah, it's like I guess that stuff happens, but
I'd like to talk to that mother.
Yeah, exactly, right. It's a Reader's Digest story from the 50s, I think. I don't know. I just keep hearing it. But anyway, the one of the things that was fascinating to me about this confession booth was that what was expected by many, and sort of expected by me, but what was expected by actually the gay advocacy groups I met with kind of beforehand to kind of get a lay of the land and to let them know we were coming and all that kind of thing, you know, they were thoroughly pessimistic. They thought nobody would care, for one thing. So this booth we set up, you know, had Mother Mary and a cross on the outside of it and a velour curtain, and inside there were pictures of Jesus and crosses and, you know, sort of the iconic imagery that you would see in a church.
Okay.
And what was fascinating was we had 28 people come in over the course of about 8 hours, and we had about another 60 people who wanted to come in, but the booth was occupied. You know, I was too busy talking with people. And so that was, first off, that was sort of an interesting revelation that at a gay pride event, there were, you know, 80 people or something who were interested and willing to explore what this weird, you know, church-like looking thing was, and it wasn't until they had signed the waiver and understood they were going to be filmed and all that, and then came into the booth, did they find out that I was going to confess to them. So people weren't lining up to get confessed to. People were attracted, curious, interested in this element of faith, and as is no surprise, you know, there are very few places that a gay person can go to church and feel comfortable. Mm. There's a few denominations that are open and affirming now, but by and large, it's tough to find a church. So I was interested that many people were thirsty for something that reeked of God. The second thing that was, and this was even more dramatic to me, as I alluded to, was that, you know, people didn't come in and have an argument about politics or, you know, amendments or whatever. They listened to my apology, and that seemed to break down the walls. And one of the things that I said to them was, I apologize for not loving you the way Jesus calls me to. He tells me to love my neighbor as myself. He calls me to reach out and love one another, and you'll know I'm a follower of Jesus by the love that I show you.
Mm-hmm.
And this just staggered people, because that's not generally the perception that a gay person has of who Christians are.
Wow.
Christians are the ones that are picketing and protesting and so on. That's the perception that, oh, Christians hate me. That's just who they think we are. Mm. And unfortunately, the reason they think that is because that's what they've been shown. So what was amazing was that God's hand was just over this booth this entire day, that these people told me their stories, and they broke down in tears, and I broke down in tears, and I told them my stories, and they listened to me, and vice versa. And it was really a supernatural kind of encounter. And there was one particular point in the day where, I suppose about half the people thought that I was gay. and it's funny, but sad at the same time, because they couldn't wrap their minds around a married, white, you know, straight Christian taking the trouble to come down and try and connect with them. They couldn't figure out. It just, you could see their minds scramble, trying to figure out, well, why isn't he with the guys with the signs on the other side of the park? Mm. What's he doing here talking to us and being open and loving to us? We don't get it. And to have God open their hearts and accept my apology, everyone accepted my apology. I mean, which was another thing I didn't plan on or necessarily expect.
Mm-hmm.
And what it reminded me, for me, it helped show me how little trust I seem to have in God.
Mm.
You know, the fact that I would have had any fear or trepidation about such an undertaking in the first place clearly reveals my lack of faith and my lack of trust. And it showed me, when I was willing to walk out on this invisible bridge, you know, that I was going to do this thing that I felt like God had asked me to do, to try and connect with people and try and demonstrate to Christians that, look, just do this, and people will see what happens when they take my hand. I will walk with you anywhere. And that's what happened.
That's amazing.
And it was heartbreaking at times. It was breathtaking at times. And you know, I think what happened was, you know, I created the space and the Holy Spirit showed up.
Mm.
You know, another one of those invisible things we say we believe in and don't ever act like it. You know, it's like I didn't know what was going to happen, but I trusted God was going to be there and do something. And because of that faith, he did come.
Right.
And something weird happened. And the thing is that it doesn't have to be isolated to one strange incident or one kind of outlandish stunt for a movie. That's every day.
Right.
If we're walking like we believe, we put our hand out, you know, God's got our hand, the opportunities to share his love and experience his love and the things he revealed to me in my heart through that experience, let alone what was reflected to others, it's just so multifaceted if we actually just trust a little more.
Right.
And boy, that you want to talk about proof of God. It's like, I know this is a faith walk. I get it. I get that we don't get to touch it. But boy, it's more real than it's ever been for me. And that's the experience that I hope people, you know, take away from the film Lord Save Us From Your Followers. Because as one of those followers who spends 5 years making a movie named after a bumper sticker, you know, I know, you know, without a shadow of a doubt how powerful God is. And now I have seen him moving in places all around that I just didn't see before.
Right.
Partly because I was afraid to look, because I was afraid he might not really be there, but he is.
Yeah, well, that's very evident from your stories there, and from, you know, seeing part of what you filmed at the Gay Pride event and in other places. So I really applaud you for just taking that step of faith and getting out of the boat, so to speak, and trusting that God will meet you there. I've had many experiences like that myself, stepping out and just being blown away by how God meets me in certain places, sets up divine appointments, divine interventions all the time. So great stuff.
Yeah, that's true. True.
Once again, we're speaking with Dan Merchant. He is the director of the film Lord Save Us From Your Followers. You can check out the trailer and order the DVD, LordSaveUsTheMovie.com. One of the things you mentioned also is just loving people the way Jesus calls us to love. And, you know, Jesus said that all the world would know that we are Christians by the love that we have for one another. And I think you really demonstrated that. And another key moment in your film, Lord Save Us From Your Followers, that demonstrates this is when you went to film a group of people who were working with the homeless, you know, washing their feet. And you interviewed a man and you asked him, why are these people here? What are they doing? What motivates them? And he said, well, it's pretty obvious that they have Christ in their life. The Christ is in them. That's why they're here. Tell us about that night. That was really powerful.
Yeah, that's a tremendous outfit called Bridgetown Ministries, again out of Portland, Oregon. One of the reasons we shot a lot in Portland, Oregon, it was at the time the sort of the least religious or the most unchurched city in America.
Mm.
So I thought it made an interesting petri dish. like, okay, so here's a place where there's no faith. Okay, fine. Then someone explained why all this stuff is going on here, and it was pretty amazing to see this particular group. They do an activity called Night Strike. And I think they do it on Thursday nights now. And I guess the good news is for people who don't live in Portland that are listening to the show is that there's similar things going on in just about every city I visited. So they're usually a small ragtag group of beautiful people doing difficult work. But I've met them in Waco and Philadelphia and, you know, New York City and, you know, all over the place. So the good news is they're everywhere, even if they're not getting as much press as Pat Robertson or something. But these guys in Portland, they get together on a Thursday night now to meet the needs of the homeless. And what they do is they pull volunteers from, you know, multiple denominations. It's not just like one big church downtown or something.
Okay.
It's, you know, I think there were 14 different denominations there the night we shot, and I was just back down there before Christmas, and there was a dozen or something at that time. And I love that, first of all, because denominations were created because we couldn't agree with each other on certain points of doctrine. So the fact that we're splitting hairs, you know, is a bit frustrating. And the fact that we can come together to do what Christ called us to is encouraging and feels like how we should be.
Right,
and so that's a neat element that Bridgetown does, is they just bring so many different kinds of churches together for the purpose of loving the least. And so they do things like, you know, they prepare a meal for the homeless. They've got clothes that they share, and They have a thing called a dignity station where you can, you know, shave or brush your teeth, which, you know, it didn't occur to me, you know, until I saw that table that, oh, yeah, of course, if you're homeless, where do you shave? Yeah, how would that happen?
Right.
And just little basic things like that. They really were thoughtful about what do people need from us and how do we meet those needs. And then the coup de grace is washing the feet of the homeless. And it's got a practical component, obviously, because anybody that's been hunting or in the war or anything like that knows that, you know, you got to keep your feet clean and dry if you want to avoid disease and stay comfortable and all that. So getting your feet washed and getting a fresh pair of socks or a new pair of shoes, you know, there's a very practical element. And then, of course, there's a deeply spiritual servant's heart that has to be in play if you're going to be on your knees washing the feet of a homeless person.
Right.
It's not pretty. And it's a remarkable process. All the things that go back and forth between the person washing the feet and the person receiving the foot wash, I mean, one of the things I noticed was that how difficult it is for the person who is getting their feet washed. I mean, I don't know about you, but I don't particularly like taking my shoes off in front of anybody. And, you know, yeah, here's my funny toes. And, you know, there's a vulnerability that's required.
Sure. Yep.
And an openness. And frankly, it's people don't feel worthy of the gift, which I think is a beautiful symbol of kind of how we are with God. It's like, you know, how often are we feeling that, oh, God, I don't really deserve that? Of course we don't deserve it. That's why it's grace.
Mm.
That's what Christ's sacrifice was. It's a gift to us that we just have to reach out and accept. So I thought it was very symbolic on that level from the point of view of the homeless person. And then, of course, from the point of view of the Christian doing the serving, you know, that's exactly the kind of humble, loving gesture. And it carries great symbolism back to, you know, the Last Supper and back to the first century traditions and things like that of hospitality and a servant's heart. So it was just this emotionally loaded kind of gesture and event that's going on. And, you know, you referenced the guy that was a homeless guy who I asked, you know, well, what's the story with these people who come down here? And he didn't know what I thought about it, but he explained it to me. And he explained it to me with such sureness and understanding that I'm like, isn't that interesting? That when we argue politics, people aren't sure what we think. You know, when we're so concerned about the gospel of being right, when we're so concerned about we have to teach these people how wrong they are about the way they're behaving, we need to straighten them out, and then God can show up. Boy, we've got that so wrong. And when you see somebody show up with love in their hearts and willing to meet whatever the need is, boy, the message is not confused then.
Right.
They sure understand who God is then. They sure understand who we are then. And that homeless guy that you quoted is a great example. Well, why? I asked him, why do you think they're here? Well, I think it's because they got Christ in them, and Christ moves them to do what they do.
Mm-hmm.
He understood. This is not an educated guy, and he was probably drunk. And he still understood.
Wow.
You know? And I just thought that was such a lesson for how we need to move through our lives daily,
sure,
moment to moment.
I thought that was probably one of the most powerful pieces of your film. I mean, the whole film is amazing, but that one quote of that one gentleman just really struck me. And I was like, wow, how simple is it if we just live the way Christ calls us to live? Everyone will know who God is and who we are by our love.
And that's it. I think it goes back to the trust thing we were talking about before. We must not trust that God will communicate the message. Well, gee, if I don't try and save the guy while I'm washing his feet, how will he know that I love him? How will he know about Jesus?
Mm.
Trust me, he knows. He knows you're a Christian and you're there. It's like, well, who are these people? They know that it's church people who come. They know it's people that love Jesus. So it's amazing how when they understand the motivation that we have, and it's as simple as, well, why are you here? Well, I love Jesus and he loves you. That's why I'm here. And you know what? If I want to show God I love him, I love you. That's how I prove to God that I love him.
Wow.
I can say all day long anything I want to God about how much I love him, and doesn't really amount to a hill of beans unless I can show him by doing something that costs me.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what's so powerful and beautiful, because God will show you how much he loves you when you're in those moments serving others too, which is the other part that we don't believe or trust.
Yeah.
We just got to get in and walk with them a little bit, and the words in that old dusty book start to make a whole lot more sense. At least they did to me when I started doing this stuff.
Sure. I mean, the Bible says that faith without works is dead, and I will show you my faith by my works, and that's what we need to do. You know, and again, going back to Jesus himself, here's God in the flesh, the master, the teacher, getting on his knees and washing the feet of his disciples, one of the last things he did on earth before he was crucified. And he set an example. He said, now, you know, I've washed your feet. Now you ought to wash each other's and basically do what I do. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I know. And it seems like he was pretty explicit, doesn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
How we cruised past, love one another. And, you know, there's a great organization called Mission Year that works in several of the big cities in the country. And I think their motto is love God, love people, nothing else matters. And, you know, and Jesus essentially said the exact same thing. Love God, love your neighbors, yourselves, and you can hang all the other laws and commandments on those two.
Right.
And what we don't understand about that commandment is that when we're doing those two things, the rest of the stuff sorts it out.
Right.
You know, our pride and our ego and our need to be right and our need to judge and all these things, it does fall aside. We start to understand that that's not the way to be, that that's not important, that God has such a higher purpose for us. You know, we just have to trust Him enough to do those first two things with earnestness, and the other stuff gets revealed. And it's amazing how simple it is, and of course how incredibly, you know, difficult because it does require, you know, relying on Him.
Right.
I joke that this gospel of being right versus the gospel of love, it's like the gospel of being right, I can do that, Daniel, all by myself. I don't need to rely on God for that. I can read the New York Times and be smart as anybody else and have an argument every day of the week. No problem. I don't need God. Love the unlovable. Be patient with those that make you impatient. I can't do that.
You need God for that.
Without relying on God.
Totally. Well, Dan, your film has been really a reminder to me personally because, you know, I have pretty strong beliefs. I know what I believe, and I believe that Jesus is the truth. And, you know, my ministry is on radio, and I need to be reminded sometimes that, you know, there was a great quote, I think, either on your website or in the film itself that said, no one ever became a Christian by losing the argument. And I really appreciate that. So, I think, again, your film does a great job of demonstrating that. So I highly recommend anyone, if you're listening, please check out the film, Lord, Save Us From Your Followers. Once again, we are speaking with Dan Merchant. Dan, in the course of making this film, I want to ask you two things. What did you learn about yourself and God during this process? And what did you really want to communicate to your viewing audience?
They sort of became one and the same, I guess. I mean, I've already kind of alluded to it, that I was a whole lot more comfortable making my faith small and about being right, as opposed to expanding it to God size, which is, you know, go out and love people and help them understand who I am. So really, I had to learn some hard lessons about, you know, just what you alluded to with Philip Yancey's quote about, you know, no one ever converted to Christianity because they lost the argument. Oh, really? You know, that kind of actually seems probably true.
Right, right.
And, you know, that explains a few things in my experiences as well. So that was a big lesson for me, was that this us versus them idea, there's no fruit in it. You know, then, which is a big clue to me about, are we living our lives in ways where the people around us, you know, have a better idea who God is, or moving closer to God as we are, because of how we're living our lives, or is the fruit not there? Are we around people who just don't want to talk about religion and politics with us because we just get so fired up, and unless we get people to agree with us, we go home mad? You know, is that who we are? Because that doesn't help convey who Christ is. And that's got nothing to do with shying away from the truth. It has nothing to do with, oh, well, the truth divides and, you know, all that kind of business. It's like, hey, everybody relax. There's nobody here on this planet qualified, okay? If you want to make teams, there's us and there's Him. That's it. Those are the teams.
Very nice. Nicely put. I like that. What kind of reaction are you getting from viewers, both Christian and non-Christian?
Well, that's the cool thing. They're basically reacting the same way. They say all the same things you said, that it's heartwarming, it's thought-provoking, it's heartbreaking, it's challenging, it's inspiring. I mean, everybody's saying the same kinds of things, which is very unusual.
Yes, to get them all to agree, that's a feat.
Basically, agree on the big beats. Agreeing on this us versus them thing is getting all of us no place.
Okay.
And, you know, I get comments from atheists and people who are, you know, have no time for church. Real quickly, a couple comments. comments there, we showed the film at Yale, and there was a guy there who was a guest of a friend, and this guest was described as not just non-Christian, but kind of anti-Christian.
Okay.
You know, he really didn't like the church or Christians, and we talked a little bit about Bridgetown and the foot washing, and this guy's jaw dropped open during this part of the film.
Hmm.
And he revealed later to his friend something pretty startling, and if you know atheists, this is one of the beautiful things about atheists, is they're usually pretty well-read. They've usually thought about what they think,
right,
and they usually have some kind of evidence for their beliefs, which isn't always the case with other folks. So what this guy said was, I've read the Gospels, and I've read, you know, Christ's teachings, and for the first time in my life, I saw what I always pictured Christians would look like if they existed in nature.
Wow.
Isn't that hilarious? And so the guy who was telling me the story says, oh, yeah, it was like he saw Bigfoot.
Mm-hmm.
You know, his whole life, Christians, real Christians, Christians that resemble Jesus don't
right.
exist.
Wow.
And then here he sees them in the film and is like, wait a second.
Incredible.
What does that mean? So the film to that guy who's on a different place in his journey than I am, you know, means something else. And what it means is that, okay, maybe the unfortunate soundbite that I heard Jerry Falwell say on CNN doesn't actually represent the totality of Christian teaching. You know, big
right.
surprise, but that's what people think. So the fact that the film can reveal the true heart of what we can be in Christ, it's appealing to people. It's intriguing. It's that fragrance of Christ that the Bible talks about. We had another event where we screened the film at Lewis and Clark College, which in 2008, it must have been, they saw an early cut. 2008, they were the least religious campus in America, according to Princeton Review. So this audience of 12 Christians and 288 non-Christians saw the movie and just loved it.
That's awesome.
And it was amazing because this kid came up to me afterwards, and he ended up being kind of representative of this certain part of the group, saying, "Hey, Dan, I'm an atheist. I don't like Christians. Church people make me crazy. I think the church is just about money and blah blah blah." And he had all the kind of the usual arguments
sure.
heard for years. And then he goes, "But I got to tell you something. I really didn't understand that whole foot washing thing. I really didn't understand what those Christians were doing. And you know what? I didn't understand why I was crying when I was watching that."
Wow.
So he kind of sits there for a second and he goes, "You know what? I think I'll have to try that."
Wow.
So what happens in the next 3 weeks after this screening is 88 of the kids out of that audience, presumably a vast majority, not Christian college kids, went down and volunteered alongside the Christians at Night Strike.
That's amazing.
It is amazing. And so what it showed to me, and this was very early on, what it showed to me is that people outside the faith who think they don't want Jesus, they think they don't want the church, they just have never really met him. They've never seen him.
Well, when you meet Jesus face to face, it changes you.
Yeah, because anyway, you can do the math on this one. It's like when people see, those Christians aren't getting anything out of this. They're just helping the people who need help. That's beautiful. Well, there's a reason every person on the planet would think that gesture is beautiful, and because this goodness can only spring from one place. And so my comment to friends who you know want to try and convert people over lunch is, let people see God and discover God for themselves.
Mm-hmm.
It's our job to reflect Him, and it's our job to embody Him, to be the body.
Right.
You know, it's not just a metaphor. It's like we're supposed to be, you know, in the flesh. You know, He ain't here, so we've got to represent Him. And when we do, people recognize something powerful and beautiful and true and are drawn to it.
That's right.
So that's what happens. That's what happens with this movie, and it's weird and beautiful.
Yes, it is. Well, Dan, unfortunately, we are out of time, but I want to thank you so much for taking the time out to share your testimony and this wonderful new movie. Again, it's called Lord Save Us From Your Followers. Go check it out in theaters, and we'll be on DVD shortly. You can go to his website, www.lordsaveusthemovie.com. Once again, Dan Merchant. Thanks again, Dan.
Thank you, Daniel.
All right. Friends, that about does it for this edition of Divine Intervention. If you'd like to get more information or you want to listen to any of the archives, they're all on the internet, www.divineinterventionradio.com. And of course, if you have a question or a comment, you can hit me up, divineintervention@mail.com. divineintervention, all one word, at mail.com. Thanks so much for tuning in, and God willing, we will see you again next week for another edition of Divine Intervention. Take care and God bless. Thanks for listening to Divine Intervention. More information, free downloads, and podcasts can be found on the web at www.divineinterventionradio.com.